RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Okay, I'm a little reluctant to start off Tech Tuesday in the normal way with, hi, it's Tuesday, and boo-boo, because someone might interrupt or insert themselves like they did last Tuesday.
I've got him busy today, so
you're there.
Kit's distracted.
Yeah, because that kind of came out of the blue. I wasn't expecting that. Because I don't think we had our cameras on at the time. So I just thought you'd be there, and then suddenly it's Kit.
Got hijacked just a tad.
And I'm dealing with a machine, not a person, all of a sudden. Though, do we call him a he? I suppose with a male-sounding voice, Kit is a he. Is he gendered?
Yeah, just don't ask Chris Hipkins if he's a he or not.
Does Chris Hipkins know that he's a he?
More philosophical questions on another program.
Yeah, that's not for a tech program, right? That's for something very philosophical. Though we get a little philosophical on this show because the tech kind of points to these big questions. All right, great to have you back, Stephen. And I know if anyone interrupts, we'll just deal with it, you know.
We'll just deal with it. Yeah.
Could be anyone if it's AI too. It might even be Joe Biden or something, you know. Hey, man. Anyway, let's start off as we do with the feedback. Who's been getting in touch, Stephen?
So the first item was, oh, my gosh, this is brilliant. From a huge Knight Rider fan of the 80s, Beth, Kit is just the best. Thank you, Stephen and Paul.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah, that did bring back memories for people. A few people told me that. That brings back memories.
Yeah.
I like the way that Kit described all your modifications in such detail, you know, to the engine and the carbs and then the software on the inside and even the, what was it, the LRGB lights.
Oh, RGB.
RGB, sorry.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Very precise. You'd expect that. All right. That's a nice bit of feedback first up. Anything else?
So this is one that came in a little while ago, actually. So apologies for getting back to this now. But Gay asks that I don't understand how the Reserve Bank is trying to sell us digital cash. If I understand correctly, they say you will still be able to access digital cash. Well, let's just call it what it is, CBDCs, even when the internet is down. Can you explain how that can be? It's digital, right? Don't we need the internet of all things to complete the transaction?
Yeah, that's what I would have thought.
Well, you see, like they say, it's a word game, really. So
yeah.
They promise us that they're not going to take away cash. So by inserting the cash with the word digital, I think you're supposed to believe that cash hasn't been taken away because they're just relabeling it as digital
cash. It's a sell job, let's be honest.
It's a sell job. That's why you're going, huh, this doesn't quite seem right. That's because it's not. And technically speaking, yes, for most transactions, you do need the internet. But for one-on-one transactions, like for someone you might physically meet, it is possible to basically transfer currency from one person to the other if you're both sufficiently set up for it.
Yeah, but if the internet goes down, how do you spend the money? How do you access anything? You can't.
No, not easily.
But
at the same time, it's like, well, never mind the internet if you have no electricity.
Okay, well, it started the electricity.
Yeah.
Yeah. They leave that bit out.
Yeah, they do.
What, are we all going to have generators?
And what do they take?
Yeah, well, fossil fuel. Okay. Good questions, though, to be asking. Keep them coming to 2057 and inbox at realitycheck.radio. Let's look at some news now. Stephen, and the arrest of Pavel Durov. Who's he?
He is the founder and CEO of Telegram. Telegram is a platform that is used by about 900 million people on a monthly basis. And the fact that he's been arrested is basically sending shockwaves through the tech community, particularly those who are concerned with freedom of speech, because he has historically not been somebody who's played all that well with certain authorities. He claimed to have left Russia in 2013 or 2014 because of them wanting to implement certain controls. And he said no. They went and set up office elsewhere. The Telegram companies presently based in Dubai had actually originally started in St. Petersburg. But now the fact that they have now come down on him is a massive threat to freedom of speech, which seems to be doing the rounds these days. And my view is that, I mean, they haven't officially said all of the things that they were going to charge him on, but my feeling is that this is institutions leveraging the oldest tool they have available to them, and that is fear.
Yeah. Now, I don't know the circumstances too well, but I think he was arrested in Paris after having to land in his corporate jet for some reason, and the gendarmes were waiting for him right there.
Yes, as he was travelling, apparently a warrant for his arrest was put out, and as you say, waiting for him to arrive.
I noticed, because I'm following the Ukraine thing quite closely, I have been, seems a lot of information about that war, which doesn't come through mainstream media sources, originates, a lot of the stories, a lot of the comment, let's say, originates through the Telegram app.
Yes, that's right. It was quite a necessary tool for everyone to have in the Ukraine, because they were able to coordinate, communicate. And in fact, in some places where air sirens were not effectively working, they were able to warn each other via Telegram of impending raids.
And also, I think his brother, because I've been reading a bit about it today and yesterday, his brother is a computer genius, and they have a Bitcoin, don't they? The Ton coin, is it? Have I got that right?
Yes, 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 that's right. That's quite closely associated with Telegram.
So that might be in the mix somewhere as well, as the fiat currencies of the world teeter-totter closer to falling off a cliff.
Yeah, I think this is mostly more about them wanting to assert their control, because I don't think the powers that be, if I can use that term, I don't think they want to eliminate Telegram, but control it.
Right.
And then by association, by controlling or keeping tabs on the rest of us, to say there's been certain comments that he's not done enough to tighten down on
moderate. I think the word is that they use moderate, to moderate.
Yeah, moderate, but we'll call it screw tightening. I think that term might fit better.
Yep.
And to me, that's just dumb, because that's like looking at, for example, if it turned out to be that a Toyota Corolla happened to be the most popular car used for doing RAM raiding, that would be like going to arrest the CEO of Toyota for making sure that people who commit RAM raids don't use Toyota vehicles to do it.
Yeah, good analogy. Yeah.
Because that's what this is really about. And allegedly, Apple are now reported to be taking away Telegram from the Apple App Store, which is a further reminder, you know, this is case in point why decentralized systems must be used, and why selecting the appropriate technology is pertinent to freedom.
It's obvious who's compliant, isn't it? Really is. Who's playing the game?
They've got TikTok now. They've now gone Telegram. So what's next? Rumble and X? Good luck taking on Elon Musk.
Yeah, mind you, they're trying it, sort of. There are rumblings. So on a scale of 1 to 10 in tech news, Stephen, are we at a 10 on this one?
Well, Yeah, pretty much, I think. Well, I mean, it's not quite, it's not CrowdStrike.
Okay, nine.
If you would have called CrowdStrike a 10, then this could be 8 or 9. And because the other thing, too, is that this is still warming up.
Yeah.
Because CrowdStrike was in many ways a flash in the pan compared to how this is going to be drawn out. And various other people like Elon Musk and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. have voiced their concerns about the need to protect free speech. And it's never been more urgent. And you will have heard me say for a long time now about the need for decentralized systems and using them and choosing your technology wisely. Because if it's not working for you, it's working against you, in my view.
He's worth $11.5 billion from what I'm reading. So He's got money. He can, I guess, defend himself. But how can you defend yourself against a deep state that really wants to take you out?
Well, particularly if they, do things like freeze assets and all that stuff that they like to do.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So that's big in tech news. Moving on. And Pakistan hastily implements firewall, like internet firewall. Is that what that is?
Yes, and on a national level, so a little bit like what China have done with their great firewall of China, if you like. So the Pakistan Software Houses Association is strongly condemning the recently implemented national firewall, and they warn that there could be a severe and potentially catastrophic impact on the country's rapidly growing IT sector. And they are estimating that financial losses resulting from these issues could reach $300 million, with the potential for it to go even higher if issues persist. Because right. What's happened is that it's caused significant operational disruptions, prolonged internet outages, and inconsistent VPN performances. So if this carries on, then people are not going to be able to trust them. They're not going to be able to work with them because they simply can't communicate with them. And Pakistan already has an internet freedom rating of 26 out of 100.
Okay.
Or to put it in simple terms, it sucks.
Yeah, it's like having an F or something.
Yeah.
And what's the reasoning? They don't want nasty things from over the horizon coming in and interfering with the programmed, pre-programmed public discourse?
Because they say they are basically trying to protect the country, but we know that's the sell.
From what, though?
From the rest of the world, but we know because they've implemented a deep packet inspection, and that's been there since 2019, and they say it's to filter and block any material that is quote-unquote deemed threatening to the country's national security, which I interpret as if people don't like the way we run the country, we're going to do what we can do to prevent them from speaking out, because other large platforms there have blocked YouTube, WhatsApp, Bleep, Fiverr, TikTok, and other things over concerns regarding immoral content. So I guess
theocracy, aren't they? They're a theocracy.
Yeah. So there's the things that we do in certain cultures that are not okay in other cultures.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Probably no big surprise then.
No, I mean, like in China, they've already banned Signal, Telegram, and WhatsApp from the Apple App Store.
Okay.
Because they want everyone to use the Chinese versions of those.
So they can keep an eye on it. Yeah, of course.
Uh-huh. That's it.
Speaking of Signal, Russia's blocked Signal. That surprised me when you were quickly before we were chatting, before we went on air, describing some of the news stories around. I wouldn't have thought they would have been up for that, because they kind of are sort of semi-free, aren't they, Russia?
Okay. They've also done blocks on YouTube, and a YouTube spokesperson had said that they're aware of reports of some people not being able to access YouTube in Russia, and that's not a result of any technical issue on our side or actions taken by YouTube themselves.
Yeah.
And, this is all part of a broader effort by Russian authorities to control and restrict access to communication platforms that, according to them, do not comply with the country's strict regulations.
Okay. YouTube, it's a bit rich for YouTube to be criticizing. I don't know if they were criticizing, but criticizing anyone, because they're always taking people's content down or restricting the distribution of demonetizing videos. So they're pretty bad offenders themselves all around.
They are, but in a statement to Russian media, now I'm going to have a crack at pronouncing a Russian word, so I might completely hose this up. I'm not even going to finish the word.
Okay. Some
Russian bloke in a statement to Russian media said that he made the claim that access to Signal was restricted due to its failure to comply with national legislation, particularly laws designed to prevent the use of messaging services for terrorist and extremist activities. The exact legal requirements that Signal allegedly violated were not specified, but the regulator has previously targeted platforms that refuse to provide backdoor access to user data or fail to register with Russian authorities. So in other words, it's attack on freedom of speech.
Yeah, mind you, when you're in a war and you've got operatives, Ukrainians probably, behind your lines spying, I can see why you would want to limit the opportunities for, encrypted confidential messaging between, those people. But still, yeah.
Yeah, it's a continual attack on free speech in my mind. In the end, that's what it's all about. Like, you can have this bit of software running if we give it the okay. It's the people versus institutions/authorities/insert other word here.
And we've been doing it like this now for 30 years anyway, and the world hasn't fallen over. So
no, it's just the landscape changes, but it still looks the same.
Yeah, okay. Zero-click Windows vulnerability. What does that mean? I know what vulnerability means, and I know what Windows is, but zero-click, what?
Yeah, so the IPv6 addressing scheme that is replacing the older IPv4 addressing scheme, and maybe I'll talk in detail about these on another day, but there's a fairly critical issue around the IPv6 addressing scheme on Windows. It's called zero click because usually a lot of vulnerabilities can take place whereby someone sends you a phishing email and you click on a link that takes you over, or maybe there's some dirty attachment. This isn't that, because in order to be targeted, then your computer just simply has to be switched on and connected to a network.
Oh, I see.
And yep. It has a severity rating of 9.8 out of 10, so that makes it really, really bad. So you're suggested to either disable IPv6 on your Windows machine or just make sure the thing's kept up to date with patches, because Microsoft have created a patch for it.
Does that automatically load, and because they do updates, don't they? Windows automatically updates itself, does it, on particular days?
Yeah, something like this would get pushed out quite fast. So long as your machine is checking and installing stuff, then you should be okay. But it's, get it done, basically.
So you may not even, you won't know it's even happened until it hits you. Is that what you say?
Yeah, because it's like a worm, and the severity of this is that even if you have a firewall on your machine, this attack happens before the firewall on the operating system gets a look in.
And
it means that an attacker can execute code remotely on your machine.
Is that something that the Windows software designers overlooked?
Pretty much. I think there is, I don't know if there's anything underlying with the IPv6 protocol. Where was I going with that sentence? I think it's just more of an implementation issue. I mean, bugs always show up all the time. This is a pretty big one. So patch, patch, patch.
Oh, dear. Massive data breach. How massive?
2.9 billion records, massive. Ooh. It's not as big as the one that we talked about early in the year.
That was the phone company, wasn't it?
It was the motherlode of all data breaches, that one, earlier in the year. But still, 2.9 billion is quite a lot. And this is actually, it's 2.9 billion people. And this includes names, full names, former and complete addresses going back 30 years, social security numbers, and more. The data was stolen from the national public data by a cyber criminal group that goes by the name USDOD. And there's naturally a lawsuit following up on this. So I guess the takeaway is that you really do need to be careful about where you stick your data and who's looking at it.
What would have happened to that data? Would it have been sold and traded and distributed, do you think?
Sold on the dark web for about $3.5 million.
Is that what it's worth?
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
And that's US currency as well.
Yeah. I'm quite surprised. Actually thinking about it, 2.9 billion, okay, individuals. But still, that's, there's money there for sure.
I'm just trying to think, it was 2013, there was a fairly massive one in Indonesia. Their health system and leaked in that was data about every man, woman, and child in the country.
And there's over 100 million there, I think, isn't there? Population is big.
Yeah, it's crowded. So usually in the health sector, IT security is not a big thing. It doesn't have the resources it ought to.
Yeah, and we had that that issue with Waikato District Health Board a while back.
Yes, I remember that one.
So with a digital ID, imagine if someone hacked that.
Yep.
The database of that. Big long pause. Yeah.
I was just quantifying it. It would be an imagine of all the extra data that we didn't know was necessarily being stored about us.
Yeah, that would be a shocker, wouldn't it, to find that. Okay, well, that is big.
I think the cognitive dissonance would probably cause a few brain hemorrhages here and there.
Yeah, a few heads would explode. No doubt about that. Any other news stories that we need to know about this week?
No, just those for this time.
Okay. Let's continue. Well, it's a series, really, because we're up to our third chat about this. Women in tech. Who have we had so far? Just remind us again, please.
So the first woman was Hedy Lamarr, and then we had Margaret Hamilton.
Okay. Now, last week, Margaret Hamilton, software writer for the Apollo spacecrafts, right? For the landing systems.
And lunar modules.
The LEM. Yes. The Lunar Egress Module is what that stands for. I've actually stood next to one of them because they made more Apollos than flew, right? They had another three, I think, that had been produced. And LEM for Apollo 18, I think, is in the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., along with the Columbia, which was the Apollo 11, capsule, command capsule, etc., and numerous moon lunar buggies. You know, they're quite big, but they're so flimsy. Mm. You know, the walls are paper thin. Yeah. Obviously, they had to be quite light, but they're also quite large, and they're all wrapped in sort of gold foil and things like that. They're incredible things to look at. The LEM. You know, you can imagine them coming down the steps, and it's quite a drop from the door to the bottom of the step. You know, it's quite a way down. But of course, with a sixth gravity, if you fell, you probably wouldn't hurt. You'd just bounce off the ground and back up again. Anyway, just saying, it was pretty cool to be next to one.
Mm. It would be nice.
Anyway, so who are we talking about today?
Three women, actually. So we've got Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, and Mary Jackson.
Right.
And these three women were depicted in the 2016 movie Hidden Figures, which had the tagline, "Meet the woman you don't know behind the mission you do."
Oh.
And this was a movie that covered them working on Project Mercury. And so Katherine Johnson, she was, I guess, pretty much the central figure in this. There's been interesting things. I mean, the movie itself was quite well received, but there've been a few inaccuracies in certain places. Like one of the women was, from memory, depicted as to working in the West Center on the campus, where in reality she was on the East Side and things like that. Katherine Johnson, she from a very young age was quite mathematically inclined, very, very smart. And she ended up, or she started off as a research mathematician. And even though it was a difficult field for African American woman to enter, as to all these women in the movie were. She first worked in a pool of women performing mathematical calculations, and Katherine herself referred to the woman in the pool as virtual computers who wore skirts. And their main job,
okay,
their main job then was to read data from aircraft black boxes and carry out other precise mathematical tasks. So many of these women actually started out before NASA became NASA. And it was actually called, I guess you'd call it NACA.
Pretty sure.
The National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, which in 1958 changed to the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. So
NASA.
One of the cool things that Katherine did was that she calculated the trajectory for Alan Shepard, who was the first American in space. And John Glenn requested that she personally recheck the calculations that the electronic computers did before he did his flight aboard Friendship 7. And her calculations were so good when she was doing the trajectories that when he returned to Earth, they were able to locate him quite quickly, because she was just bang on.
Yeah. I think Alan Shepard ended up going to the moon.
Okay, yep.
Yeah. So this was the first manned space program from NASA, wasn't it, Mercury?
Yeah, to have someone up in space, because this all kickstarted. The space race began in 1957 when the Soviets put up the satellite Sputnik 1. Which kind of surprised the Americans, and then like, oh boy, okay, we need to pull our socks up and compete.
And then Yuri Gagarin went up.
Yes, that's
right. Before Alan Shepard, I'm pretty sure.
Mm.
Communism delivered the goods early on.
It seems like it, didn't it? So Katherine Johnson co-authored 26 scientific papers, and some of the other ladies, Dorothy and Mary, did something similar as well. Katherine has had a couple of buildings named after her as well. There's the Computational Research Facility, and I think that was on a brand new building that was opened in 2016 as well. And the BBC put her on the 100 women of influence worldwide in 2016, and she passed away at the ripe old age of 101.
Wow. Okay, that's not a bad innings, as they say.
I was going to use the word innings. Yeah, definitely.
The century.
Mm.
They always seem to live quite a long time, these smart people, engineering types. Though Wernher von Braun didn't, but anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So when in the movie Hidden Figures, it seems that the issue of segregation seemed to be worse than it really was. Katherine Johnson herself said that, yes, it was there, but she just typically ignored it and got on with things.
Yep.
So, and then going back a bit further, in 1935, NACA had established a section of women mathematicians, and they were the ones that did the complex calculations. Women were considered, or sorry, computing was considered woman's work, while
oh really,
yeah,
okay,
while engineering was left up to the men.
Yeah. Oh, so the math, the non sort of, how would you describe it? The metal, the nuts and bolts, for men, mathematics for women. That's how they saw it, because a soft sort of thing rather than a
yes,
hard rather than sort of thing,
physical, yeah,
physical thing, yeah,
mm. Yeah, yeah. And interestingly, that in 1941, then President Franklin Roosevelt issued a couple of executive orders, 8802. And that was to desegregate the defense industry. And then Executive Order 9346, and that was to end racial segregation and discrimination in hiring and promotion among federal agencies, because it was in that year as well that USA entered World War II.
Yeah, and so they needed the extra hands-on, right?
Yep, yep. So, yeah, it was to make sure that they could draw on expertise from all areas of society and not just limit themselves.
And I'm thinking of the Tuskegee Airmen too, you know, around that time. I actually met one of them once at an air show. He was 95 at the time, sharp as a tack. Yeah. He had some stories to tell. Anyway, I'm digressing. How long did they stay in the program, Stephen?
Well,
do we know?
All of these women enjoyed very long careers, spanning several decades.
Okay. I wonder what the pay was like.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Wonder if there was pay discrimination, you know, then. Probably was, actually.
I'd say there most likely was. I mean, Katherine Johnson worked until she retired in 1986.
Oh, she would have been on the shuttle program then, probably.
Yes, I think she did work on one of the Apollo missions, again, doing trajectory work on that as well.
Yep. It's amazing how you can calculate that stuff so accurately, right? I'm just thinking of that last mission to Pluto, you know, that took the incredible images of Pluto. It's so far away, yet they were able, with all, you know, the calculations and the burn time on the engine or whatever, you know, to get it right there, all that way away, that's down to math. It just blows me away. It really does.
And you got to get it right the first time. Otherwise, yeah, it's expensive.
Oh, yeah, it's like, we missed it. Sorry, it's gone forever. Wasn't there that Kiwi mathematician who worked out the trajectories for the Voyager and what was the other spacecraft, Voyager, and, you know, the one with the golden record on it, where it slingshot through the planetary, you know, the gravity effects of the planets of the solar system and sort of use that as a way of propelling it without burning up fuel. That was smart. That was a Kiwi guy, pretty sure. But that was guy. That wasn't a woman. It was a guy.
Yeah. That's off topic. Sorry.
That's where you could define who was what.
Yes, indeed. But, you know, I think one of the things that stand out for me as to how brilliant these women were, and in particular Katherine Johnson, that, you know, when it came to doing trajectories, she was asked to verify the calculations of the electronic computer. Like, we've got this expensive equipment, but let's ask a person. Let's ask Katherine, because we trust her more than we trust the computer, the electronic computer.
So, like, double check.
Yeah, but normally you might like use another computer to verify the output of the first one. But oh no, 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 we'll consult with the organic computer.
Yeah, the 1.0 version. Okay. I'd never heard of these women before. These particular three. I'd heard of the woman we talked about last week because I'd seen the picture of her holding up the printouts, but yes. I hadn't heard of these women. Though the movie now rings a bell, but I never went and saw it, of course, because don't go to movies anymore.
But they've in that movie that it also stars Kevin Costner and what's her name. Kirsten Dunst is also in it, so there's a few notable actors in that movie.
Okay. All right, well, there's another three women in tech. That's five so far.
And I've got one more up my sleeve. And her name is Grace Hopper.
Oh, okay. Space program still?
No, naval.
Naval. Okay. Radar.
Spoilers.
Okay, we'll leave it there. We'll get into that next week. And no Kit.
No, he's surveilling.
I thought
the
might pop up at the end, you know.
Oh, yeah, well. Shh, I hear you.
Tell him. Not even a person. Tell Kit. He can drop it any time. I don't mind.
Alrighty, I'll let him know. It'll go to a CPU.
Can we formulate some very tough equation or AI exercise that could put him to the test and try and catch him out? You know, to show that humans are actually smarter.
He might melt.
Well, that would be interesting on air.
Yeah, but then I'd have to fix him.
You like doing that sort of thing, though.
Well, this is true.
Okay. All right, Stephen, thanks again. We'll talk in a week.
See you then.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.